Give us a sense of how you see India evolving, especially after the current elections and so on.
I'm afraid my finger wouldn't cover much of India. It's much too big and diverse. But certainly the recent election and the vote of confidence, yeah, in more responsible macroeconomic management is a huge plus. Because one of the chief distinctions between China and India has been, well, there's two. One is the degree of openness of the economy, though India has been opening more rapidly, but it is still more closed than is China if one looks at measures of capital flows or trade flows relative to the economy. But the other is India's, frankly, poor performance in managing its public accounts. Yeah. There was improvements in India's fiscal balances, but it was almost entirely due to the fact that the nominal economy simply grew faster than it had been planned, and they didn't spend the money.
Right.
They got more revenues than planned. And so in this crisis, there's been much more difficult for India to use fiscal policy to cushion the blow because they didn't have the scope to do it. Having now got a much stronger majority for Congress and a much more, what should I say, economically orthodox, yeah, set of policymakers with a greater scope or room for maneuver, that creates, I think, the basis for more prudent fiscal management that will create greater space for private sector development, which would be a huge plus for India and the rest of the region.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the Middle East. It's a unique part of the world in that it's a lot of its economy used to be driven by oil and gas. There was an attempt at creating some depth in the economy, in the various economies, and then that lost a little bit of steam.
There's only so much real estate you can build in a short period of time.
That's correct.
Yes.
What has to happen to oil prices for the Middle East to become a promising region again, and for them to, you know, finish up the jobs that have just started? And
well, we've just had a doubling of oil prices off their low, only, even
correct.
Though they're only half of their peak of 2000 and probably 2007 and 8, I guess. But certainly with oil above $70, that creates enough revenue to more than exceed the requirements for domestic demand at the moment. Yeah? So the issues, I think, in the Middle East, well, certainly in the Gulf, were always about the pace with which you were going to be able to expand.
And how would you differentiate what's going on in Latin America, in Brazil especially, and all of the, you know, South American countries? How's that different from what goes on in Asia?
One of the most important economic distinctions between Latin America and Asia, one you've mentioned, well, actually, Latin America is not as open in general, so trade with the rest of the world intends to be a small proportion of GDP in many countries.
Even Brazil?
Including Brazil. The numbers are more akin to what you see in India than they are, say, in China, certainly than what we see in places like Korea or across ASEAN. The nature of that trade also tends to be more commodity-based. So in that sense, the commodity-intensive growth that we've seen in places like India and China are beneficial to Latin America, so long as they continue to push openness. The other thing that is a very dramatic difference between Latin America and Asia is the proportion of savings and investment. Yeah? Savings tends to be smaller and investment also lower as a share of GDP, which can provide less, which means in general, even if investment is efficient, that you're going to grow at a slower pace.
If exchange rates continue to go in the favor of the US dollar, which emerging markets would be adversely affected and which you think would benefit from any shifts in favor of the US dollar?
Well, first of all, of late what we've seen is some weakening again of the US dollar, having had a period of strength in 2008 and early in this year associated with the flight from risk. So the dollar was still viewed in general as a safe haven, and that was helping to strengthen it. As risk appetite has tended to rise, you've seen investors willing to go back into risk, which means back into emerging markets, and that's tended to lead to strengthening in general of emerging market currencies, a narrowing of bond spreads, and some recrudescence more or less across the board, because more or less across the board in 2008 and early 2009 you had significant sell-offs in emerging market currencies. Yeah? There is the underlying question about the longer term path of the US dollar. One of the adjustments that we're having out of this crisis is a shrinking of global imbalances. China's trade surplus will be smaller this year than it was last year. The US trade deficit will be smaller. That shrinkage in the imbalances on trade, or in the current account more generally, means that from that perspective, the assumption that markets were making that in the long run the dollar was going to have to get much weaker in order to adjust the US current account is no longer such a strong story, because growth or quantities are adjusting to a greater degree, and so price, the exchange rate, will have to adjust less. What that means, therefore, is still for emerging markets, yeah, given the stronger growth profile that they still possess, yeah, and particularly across Asia, that the general assumption is that it's going to be reflected in currency appreciation, but that's a result of good economics fundamentals and performance, and not a hindrance to it.